This is Nightline on the VOCM Big Land Radio Network. The opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of this station. And now, your host, Jonathan Richler.
I am back, like Luke Skywalker in Return of the Jedi. Mic drop. Thank you very much for tuning in to the show. It is the 11th of July. Can't believe it is so late in the season already. What a great couple of days it's been in the Avalon Peninsula and in other parts, northeast for sure. Can't verify if it's been as fantastic in central or western parts of Newfoundland or in Labrador, but boys and girls, give us a shout and give us the weather report because we're flipping living where it's easy right now. I'm almost forgiving January, February, March, and April. Almost. So, before we go anywhere, let's talk about how Canada loves big things. There are many parts of the country, and there were a couple of dudes on a television program called Much Music, television station, back in the day. There were two Steves that went across the country, and they actually came here, Marble Mountain, in the 80s, and they did a show called Snow Job. It was pretty cool. They did a cool, you know, a lot of cool things. Much Music was good for a few things. One of them was the Christmas Tree Toss. Love that. And then there was the cheesy videos that they did. Christopher so-and-so led the charge there. Don't remember any of these people's names. They used to be so important in my life. What was the name of that dude who had a Mount Pearl curl who used to host video hits? Dan something or other. If anyone knows, tweet us at VOCM Nightline. You know what I'm talking about. Melbourne Kroll. Hashtag. Anyway, so if you drive across Canada, as Steve and Steve did, they hung out and took pictures of or videoed themselves in front of giant Canadian icons. Now, if you read the Bible, you remember that you shouldn't worship false idols. Parts of Canada are certainly anti-biblical, if you want to look at these things as idols. Probably not, but let's do it anyway. Colborne, Ontario, there's the Big Apple. Also the best place to see free-range rabbits. City, Nova Scotia, there's a giant fiddle. Campbellton, New Brunswick, you got a big garce stainless steel salmon leaping out of a, I suppose, a stainless steel river. Where is it? Portage la Prairie in Manitoba, there's a huge can of Coca-Cola. We don't have any of these things in Newfoundland. I suppose you could say in Labrador they've got this big concrete thing called Muskrat Falls. And we might be speaking with Land Protector Denise Cole tonight. But anyway, I just think that we finally entered the giant stuff that we all like to take photos in front of, whether it's an Adirondack or a large apple. Here it is. We've got a 15-foot large Trojan horse that the Canadian Union of Public Employees has spent money to build, and they're going to take it across the island and perhaps Labrador. I don't know. Can't wait to see the itinerary of this giant chocolate horse as it goes across and tells people in, I suppose, grade six language, because how else can you transfer political messages by using a giant flipping wooden horse except by dumbing it down that P3s, public-private partnerships, are the Trojan horse of liberal healthcare. Good for you, QP. Good for you. Whoever came up with this idea, you're brilliant. You will change the political discourse with this powerful message. A large wooden horse on wheels will change the political narrative of Newfoundland and Labrador, because we will finally realize that private enterprise and public funds cannot function well. Wave your green flags as you go up and down the streets of, oh, I don't know, Corner Brook and perhaps Deer Lake and most definitely St. John's. See you at Harborside Park, everybody. Bring on your Trojan horse. And I don't mean any of that sarcastically, because frankly, I think it's a brilliant move. I truly do. This is political savvy at its best. Because why? We need stupid symbols like a giant wooden horse on wheels to make us remember that government is bad. and that unions are good, right? Do any of the rest of you feel like we are being treated as idiots, treated like idiots, by those who claim to represent and protect us? Do we need to make things as stupid as this? So today I heard a little bit of Patty Daly's VOCM Open Line show. Welcome back, buddy. Did enjoy Tim. I did certainly enjoy Daryl, but thoroughly enjoying the little of what I am catching of your show. Today I caught a conversation between you and the man who's up against everything as the only member of the House of Assembly who is allowed, apparently, to talk about whatever floats his boat, and that's Paul Lane, independent member for Mount Pearl Southlands, I think it's called. And today he was upset because potholes were in his way as he was traveling across the island. Oh my God. Nothing to do with Mount Pearl, guys, if you're traveling across the island. But anyway, there he was, MHA for Mount Pearl, talking about potholes, as he is wont to do, to bring up some issues that, frankly, nobody else seems to be talking about. Good for him. I've said it before on the show. I've said it to his ear as he is on the other end of the telephone. He talks about things that no one else does, and good for him. I wish the rest of you 39 members of the House of Assembly would do as much and flood our airwaves with your gripes, your concerns, and your positive nature, and do it in a way that may or may not remove the rhetoric. But anyway, both Paul Lane and Patty Daly used the word gypped in a colloquial form. Paul Lane was the first, Patty Daly was the second. And some people were upset about this on Twitter. I noticed it right away. I didn't say anything because I was busy. My hands were full of food at the time. I didn't tweet angrily or say that it was a trigger word or that I was offended. But frankly, if this was in any other part of the country where perhaps Roma are living, somebody might have actually gotten offended as opposed to people getting offended on behalf of the Roma. And that doesn't make it any less important. So this was a learning moment this morning on VOCM Open Line where we learned that gypped is a slur, ethnic slur. Some people would say racial slur. It opens up the conversation and the debate as to what is a race versus what is an ethnicity or culture. This is, in certain parts of the world, 1,000 times more offensive than being called a Newfie, because at certain points of the history of the world, those who were referred to as gypsies were known to be notorious thieves and criminals of all sort, people who never wanted to work. Of course, this is only because they were a landless band, because people denied them the rights to property and the rights to employment, at least to the best of my understanding of history, and I think I've read a little bit about it. The gypsies as they were known, the Roma as they were referred to now, were categorized and sent off to certain parts of Auschwitz and other death camps during the years leading up to and during the Second World War. They were right there in the gas chambers alongside, if they were lucky enough to get to the gas chamber, some of them were just shot on sight, right there along with the communists and the homosexuals and the Jews and the disabled, all exterminated, murdered, because they were undesirables. So the word gypped, yeah, it's something you don't say. And I don't think either Paul or Patty will ever say it again. And most of us who learned about this narrative today on Twitter come away from this as positive and educated and smarter. That's great. That, to me, is the power of positivity of social media and both talk radio. That's it. Now we walk away a little bit smarter. We realize that no matter how sensitive we are, no matter how much of a crusader we are for blue zones, as Paul Lane was all about 12 months ago, getting on the phone every week on the airwaves here on VOCM Nightline, Backtalk, and Open Line, talking about blue zone advocacy and looking out for those who are less fortunate or marginalized, now we learn that we have to become more aware of certain words or certain terms. I think that this is a good lesson. You want to talk about this tonight? Let's do it. You know what to do. Drop us a line on Twitter at VOCM Nightline. That is how you can reach me on our Twitter feed. You can send us an email nightline@vocm.com. I certainly enjoy everything that comes our way. And even the ones that call me stupid, I certainly enjoy those the most, I would have to say. I think today's been a great day. The sun is out. We're all eager, and we're seemingly enjoying a vacation from scandal. We are not, however, enjoying a vacation from tragedy. We are over a month since Courtney Lake's body has not been recovered. A month since Courtney Lake has gone missing would probably be the more sensitive way to say that. And we have to keep that in mind. So to all those who are volunteering to go out and look for evidence of Ms. Lake, I salute you. I truly do. And I know that some friendships are going to be made along the way, but it is through tragedy that we're all brought together. And I think we need to keep that in mind. So to the family of the Lakes who are in court today and are at home right now, or perhaps they're out in the field with a flashlight, I don't know. I'm certainly thinking of you. We're going to go to our first caller tonight. Melanie wants to talk about Omar Khadr. Melanie, welcome to the program. Hello, Melanie.
Yeah. Oh, hi.
Hi.
How are you doing tonight?
I'm all right. How are you?
Oh, not too bad.
Good.
I just finished watching a movie there a little while ago.
Okay. Are you on speakerphone, Melanie? Because you're coming through like you're speaking through a tin can.
Nope. Cell phone. Is
okay.
It a little bit better?
It's a little bit better.
Okay. No, I've dropped my phone so many times now. God only knows what it sounds like on the other end.
Oh, my. Well, as I described, it sounds like you're speaking through a tin can.
Okay. Do you need me to talk louder?
No, it's just fine, my dear. What's on your mind?
Oh. No, I called earlier today. I was trying to get on Patty's show when everybody was talking about the settlement and that was given to the young man that was brought down to the States and is accused of terrorist attacks and murder,
mm-hmm.
war crimes.
Right.
And he came back to Canada, and basically they settled over $10 million with him.
$10.5 million, yes, ma'am.
Yes. I don't know the full story behind it. I do believe that he was 15 when this occurred. And I don't know if he was actually a Canadian citizen when he did commit the crime.
Yes, he was, and that's why there was a settlement, is because he is a Canadian citizen, and his country essentially abandoned him for 10 years at Guantanamo.
Okay, but how did he end up being in a war scenario at the age of 15?
He was dragged over there by his father, to the best of my understanding. His father was killed in 2003 in a firefight with while he was in Pakistan.
Okay. Why would they return?
Why would who return?
The father and son, if they felt that their lives were threatened.
I don't understand what you mean by that. I know that they were Canadian citizens, and they did go over to fight for what they believed was a just cause on one side, and whether or not people would consider that the right side or the wrong side, they did what they did. The essence of the argument is, of course, is that Omar Khadr was considered, and this is a designation provided by the United Nations, a child soldier. He was 15 at the time. He certainly wasn't someone who was able to get a driver's license, let alone throw a grenade or fire a gun or kill people or fight for a cause, were considered minors at that age. And he falls under the designation of a child soldier because he was fighting under what's called duress. In other words, people forced him to do so.
Okay, mm-hmm. So he didn't literally pick up a gun and say, okay, I want to partake in this war, and you're my enemy, and therefore,
I don't know. He very well could have. The point is, though, when you are under a certain age, you are not necessarily responsible for your judgment, whether it's good or bad, and that's why we are protected as Canadian citizens at the very least from making terrible decisions. You're tried differently under the courts if you are a minor, and there's a whole level of law and jurisprudence when it comes to the designation of being a child soldier.
Okay, but there's some causes now. It's under the act of terrorists, as in it's an act of tyranny. And some 15-year-olds now, they get pushed until 18 to be charged for murder so they can charge them as an adult here in Canada, as in they're pushing the fall a little bit further and they're applying to charge the child as an adult.
No, you can't do that. If the act occurred when you were under 18, no matter how long it takes for the trial to arrive or to be brought out, shall we say, you're still, the act did occur when you were a minor, and therefore you're not tried as an adult, to the best of my understanding.
I still don't think that the young man should have received any money because he murdered somebody.
That has yet to be proven. His confession to throwing a grenade, which resulted in the death of one American soldier and the maiming of at least one other, if not two, has been scrutinized by the several bodies, including, I think, the International Criminal Court, as being inadmissible. There have been other testimonies from other individuals during that same period of time which have been thrown out. I think at least one of them was from Australia. There might have been another from the United Kingdom. The details I don't have at the tips of my fingers here, Melanie, but others who provided confessions under duress at Guantanamo Bay, in other words, they were tortured, their confession was brought about by torture, are being thrown out years later because they are not seen as being valid. So we don't know if he murdered anybody. We don't know if he was a terrorist. We know he was there, brought there by his father, who certainly was recognized as being a person of interest. And the Cotter family has a salt and pepper history, shall we say, in Canada. But he's receiving the payment not as a result of any of this, but as a result of having his rights violated for the time that he spent as a detainee in Guantanamo.
Yeah. The only issue I have with it is there's a lot of animosity right now for refugees coming here.
He wasn't a refugee.
I know he's a Canadian citizen. My daughter's half Egyptian. She's got an Egyptian citizenship plus a Canadian citizenship.
Okay.
But would I condole her throwing a grenade into a crowd of people? Absolutely not. I'd be like, if you do the crime, you do the time. That would be it. No money.
Okay. And so is your daughter a child soldier?
Don't go out and hurt innocent people.
Look, I don't care if you're from Egypt or Canada. It doesn't matter. If you throw a grenade, things need to be considered. But we are looking at charges that are under question as to whether or not they are valid. And second of all, the rules of being a child soldier or being designated as such are serious. And they have been agreed upon by the majority of countries on this planet to be reprehensible and evil to force children to kill other people. So it falls into a completely different realm of culpability.
Like, I know, like, cases, like, in South Africa, we have, like, really young children, like, 7 years old, and that being forced into the wars. As in, I can see what you're saying there, as in, yes, Geneva does play an important role when it comes to children.
Yeah.
But somebody that can actually say what's right, what's wrong, and is actually from another country, shouldn't they abide by the laws of their own country than to actually, like, we know better. Like, do you think somebody could force you to throw a grenade?
Yes. Yes, someone could force me to throw a grenade. There are many things that people can force you to do. You never understand that such a thing is possible until you're in that situation. And South Africa, of course, would not be where you would find child soldiers, but you would find them in parts of Central Africa. South Africa, of course, is a democratic state that had its own problems with apartheid in the 1980s, and now they're bastions of human rights. Yeah, of course. It's a huge continent, Melanie, and I totally get it. But we have, I think, to remember that Most people consider 15-year-olds children, and in certain parts of the world, Melanie, 30-year-olds are still considered children because they live in their mother's basements, mothers and fathers' basements.
Well, hopefully we all learn from this, and maybe our government can do up some new law, as in legislature. Sorry about the way I said that. Legislation?
Yeah, legislation. But we do have part of the law in the sense that we are party to the Convention on Child Soldiers, which is part of the United Nations, of which Canada is a member. We don't need to make the laws up. They're already existing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was going to get on a more positive topic.
Let's do it.
Yes. Words, how they can be mistaken.
Okay.
Or offend. There's one that I heard of there when I used to do art history.
Okay.
And I really laughed at it. You know how we have a connection to the Vikings, and Vikings have become popular and everything?
Oh, yeah.
Did you know that the word barbarians actually came from the origins from the Norse, as in being bearded men when they attacked the coast?
I always thought it was part of Ethiopia for the bear, but so you're telling me barbarians comes from bearded folks. That's fascinating.
Bearded men, yes. Okay. As in, they were, the Celts, everything were frightened to death of the bearded men that would raid the coast, and they call them barbarians.
That's hilarious.
So people can take offense and believe that something is a racial slur, but it may have just came from vocabulary through many centuries.
Sure.
Even millennium.
Different in the case of the Roma, who, of course, were forced to be landless and were denied rights in most of the countries in Europe. They were, by definition, landless and therefore had to roam from place to place and find ways to make a living. They were, like the Jews,
you know,
during the pogroms, forced to run away, and therefore it was very difficult to make a living.
And it would be cruel to say something offensive in that matter. But I tell you one thing, I never knew until today that the word gypped was an offense against gypsies.
And therefore, it's a great day, Melanie, for a lot of us, because we all learn something, right?
Yep. Sometimes we do need something pointed out to us.
You're darn tootin'.
Because it could be said totally innocent.
As I'm sure it was, because I know both Paul Lane and I know Patty Daly, and I'm sure they both of them have their grade 11. It was completely innocent, and it was now we're a lot smarter. There are some of us who knew the difference, and now the rest of us know the difference, because everybody knows that the whole province tunes into Open Line with Patty Daly.
Yeah.
Therefore, we're a hell of a lot smarter. Tomorrow's a new day.
Yeah, we always got more room to remember, as in to learn more.
Definitely.
And you definitely learn it better if it's pointed out in a negative way.
Yeah.
But I got one more thing to say.
Oh, my. Well, we're already 8 minutes overdue, so make it quick.
I'll be very quick. Yes. How many potholes do you think we could fill with $10 million?
If I had a nickel for every pothole, I'd have at least $500,000, I think.
Yes. It would be great, wouldn't it?
You and I would. Really? We'd head down to Las Vegas and try and double our money. Thanks, Melanie. Yes. A great conversation.
All right, thanks.
Appreciate it,
you
buddy.
Have a good night now.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Great way to start the show. We're all learning a little bit more. Jamie is in the queue, wants to talk about the pool in Placentia right after this.
Call now, 273-5211, or 1-888-590-8626. 1-888-590-VOCM. Nightline will return on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network. This is Nightline on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network.
And welcome back to the program. We're going to line number two. We're speaking with Jamie. Hi, Jamie.
Hi, how are you tonight?
I'm good. How are you, sir?
Best calling. Always good.
Good. You going to yell at me for not giving you enough time, or are we going to get right into it?
No, I'm not going to yell at you for giving me no time. Anyway, you're done good tonight, right after the break. Anyway, no, listen, Jonathan, I wanted to get on your show tonight, and if I could, just have a few minutes to give an update to the people of Placentia and the whole region about this swimming pool project.
Let's do it.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate it. But anyway, we have a rotating chair, so in the last week or so, I became the chair of the pool committee again. We took turns over the last 8 years, so I am now the chair of the pool committee again for the Placentia Lions Club. And so just to give a rundown now, like we did have a few little mishaps over the last month or so, but hopefully we'll get over those. Just to give an update to the people of Placentia and the surrounding region as Whitburn and Long Harbour and out the shore everywhere. Lately, there's a lot of stuff on Facebook. And Jonathan, as you know, I've told you before, I don't use Facebook. I'm not on it. It's not that I got a problem with it. It's just I'm not as technical as everybody else, including yourself. Mm-hmm. So I like to use your airway to communicate. So in doing that, what I will say tonight, and this is better too, because it's actually me speaking and not my fingers and thumbs. So I will tell the public tonight that the pool project is moving along at a snail's pace right now, and there's factors for that. But anyway, look, there's a lot of stuff on Facebook about the pool, who's going to run the pool after, and concerns of that, and administration, and stuff with government, okay? So here's the thing. The Placentia Pool Project we embarked on was a project that we had with the previous government. There was $4.5 million from the Valet Fund, which was coming out of the $30 million. That was there. It's in place. The Lions Club done a $500,000. So people in the community are wondering about the 50-50 money and fundraising and stuff. A $500,000 has been spent on engineering work, feasibility studies, and actually a few things the council was looking for also for operations. So that money has been spent, and that's a $500,000. The Lions Club is good for another $500,000, which brings the project to $5.5 million. ACOA, when we met with ACOA last year, it was another $1 million with ACOA, so that's $6.5 million. Our mayor was in Ottawa last month, and he met with Ken McDonald, and Ken McDonald was waiting for this to go to his desk. And we looks like we can get another $1 million out of the Build Canada Fund, which is bringing it up to $7.5 million.
Excuse me, how much money does it take to build a damn swimming pool?
Listen, Jonathan, hang on. I'm getting there. If you just bear with me for a few seconds, okay? So anyway, the thing is with it, we're at $7.5 million, okay, to build this the new swimming pool, okay? So now, the thing is, we had a study or a cost estimate done. Anyway, $8 million it cost plus or totaling HST. Now, the reason why the Lions Club went this route, we actually, as a chair of the committee, we went this route through municipal affairs and through the government so that we could get a government funding. Lions Club can't do it. So anyway, at $8 million, the town of Placentia will get its HST back. So that will almost bring it back down to 7.5. So we thought within the last month or so, we would go to tender for this pool. Now, I'm wrong in saying a pool, because when the Lions Club started this project, it was just a pool. But when we saw operations and stuff like that, we got the YMCA come on side, and they were very interested in this project. They came down and done a study and everything. The YMCA is going to run the facility, but in order for the Y to run it, we had to offer other programs, and it also helps grow the community and offset costs. So we added to it. So it's a recreation facility. It's a gym. It's this, it's that.
Okay.
For $8 million, you're getting a good bang for your buck, mm-hmm. and you're getting the project done, completed. So, and there's the thing, the Lions Club, not the council, not government, they haven't spent a cent. We've spent all the money to get this to where it's supposed to be.
And so, who is we in this scenario?
Lions Club of Placentia.
All right.
And the people. Now, hang on. There's the problem, too. The people out there buying tickets, 50-50 tickets.
Yeah.
Valet give $100,000. The Freshwater Community Center give $25,000. Mm-hmm. Another company give $25,000. So all this money, Jonathan, is there, ready to go. Mm-hmm. And you know what? It's a standstill now between council and government going back and forth. And us being the Lions Club, we got all the work done. Everything is ready to go. And I don't know where the problem lies.
So, wait. Can I get in here?
Yes, go ahead, Jonathan. Sorry about that. I'm glad you cut me off. Give me a break.
Take a breath, my friend. Are you implying that you can't build a facility without government or your municipal government telling you that you can do so? You've gotten to this point. You've raised all this money without the permits?
Exactly. Listen, I don't know what's going on.
Why?
I mean, it's going to be a lot of the arena. I don't know, and that's why I'm chair of the committee, and I don't sit at many meetings or anything now because it's between the council and the government. Now, the other thing, this is a cute one. I like this one. It's all stalling, but I like this one. The engineering work is outdated. The Lions Club's two engineers met with government last Thursday, and it's outdated, and they met with them last Thursday. How in the name of God can, I mean, the completed drawings were only done the end of last year.
Well, I don't know. It depends on what the completed drawings displayed, and perhaps their specifications were outdated. I don't know what the outdated, what that term means, Jamie. We're just using one sentence, so we can't say it's ludicrous without knowing the hard data behind it. Fair enough?
That's right. Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what outdated is either. Mm. I got plans for buildings that I got, and I mean, my God, like, if they're outdated, you get a guy come in and you spend a few bucks and you tweak them a little bit and then they're backdated. I mean, so, I don't know, Jonathan. And it's the only thing is, look, I mean, I look at this current government now, and I don't want to be bashing government. I mean, I know it's hard economic times and the roads and the potholes and all this kind of stuff. But the thing is with it, look, what I envy when I see in St. John's, all the swimming pools facilities, the Acker Arena, the new Wedgwood Park, and Bannerman Park just got opened up by Siobhan Cody there last week. All Mount Pearl Summit Center, all these facilities that it's municipal and government money done to build. And in a rural place like Placentia and surrounding areas, we work so hard as volunteers to get to this point and have something there that the government, right up until this point, has put no money into. And even the $4.5 million from the Valet Fund was a $30 million economic development fund. It was money put in that was for use exactly for this purpose. And that's why we fit the bill.
Yeah.
And the last government made that announcement, Premier Davis at the time, and several ministers were out. And I even had our member at that come up and get on a T-shirt and be part of the swim team because she was running in the election. I knew that she probably might have to deal with this someday. And we all stood up there excited about this project 2 years ago. And now this current government in the last 2 years have been complaining about all the stuff the previous government's been doing. Please do not condemn the progress that this government, that last government made on this project. Now, I don't care what you condemn them on, but don't condemn them or slow down progress on the pool project.
Jamie, we got to end it there. We're up against the clock here, but you've raised some very passionate points and a lot of mysteries. So if there's any paperwork or data that you can send my way, I'd appreciate it because there's more questions than answers in the past 6 or 7 minutes. Thank you for your time. Please
right.
do me the
Thank
privilege
you.
Of sending me some data, and we'll talk again.
Hey, I hope you'll be out swimming next year.
You never know.
All right. Thanks.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye. We're going to go to the break. Afterwards, we're having a chat with you.
Call now, 273-5211 or 1-888-590-8626. 1-888-590-VOCM. Nightline will return on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network. This is Nightline on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network.
Welcome back to the program. There is a moose sighting by the weigh scales between Grand Falls, Windsor, and Bishop's Falls. We've been asked to tell listeners to proceed with caution in the area. Thank you, Melinda. And we're going to line three to talk to Dave about a moose sighting as well. Hi, Dave. Dave.
How you doing?
Good, you?
Good. Yeah, there's a moose almost got ran over just a minute ago there at Thorburn Road.
What?
Yeah. He was trying to cross the road there. And you know where the big pile of mulch is, too? There's a pit in their Infinity's pit?
No.
Okay, well, it's up past the Sunshine Park. There's
okay.
a big pile of mulch.
Yeah.
When you're driving past it, it smells like sulfur.
Okay.
But anyway, there's a young moose there in the field, and he tried to cross the road, and somebody almost struck him. And then he tried to jump the fence, but he couldn't get over the fence. He couldn't get where he wanted to go, so he turned around and ran back across the street again, the road again. So, yeah, and he's hanging around that little field there. So best. Beware that he was in the area.
Well, that's frightening. I was just up that way earlier today, although not around the mulch area because I suppose I would have smelled it. But thank you, Dave, for this, and you're raising an excellent reminder that moose are not just baymen. They like to come into town every now and then.
This is a towny one, I can tell. You got a really big mouth.
It had a man bun, did it?
A man bun, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I hope the moose is okay, and I hope that it ends up, when the time comes, that it ends up on a responsible hunter's dinner plate.
There you go.
As opposed to the dump.
Yeah. Sounds okay. Good.
Thanks, buddy.
No problem. Thank you.
Bye. Have a good night, sir. Cheers.
You too. Bye.
So if you're out by Thorburn Road, watch out for that moose, because we all have our day. We all have our day in the sun, and we all have our day on the plate. Well, not humans. I mean, if you end up on a plate and you're a human, whoever is doing that to you is probably going to end up in jail. But I digress. This is a weird conversation. I'm not sure how it went this way. But anyway, all I'm trying to say is that moose are beautiful and majestic and very, very dangerous. And they should be able to frolic for their lives until that one bad day where they end up at the end of a hunter's bullet and then feed an entire family, if not five or six families, with their beautiful, delicious biomass. That is what it is to be a Newfoundlander and Labradorian, is to enjoy the bounty of nature. Unfortunately, moose come in out of nature. Perhaps they're tantalized by the smells of fried chicken and mulch. I don't know, but we should always be alert, whether we're in town or around the bay. Right now, this fellow knows a thing or two about moose. We're speaking with Chess Crosby. How are you, sir?
Well, I'm just listening with some amusement to your repartee there. It reminds me of one of the cases I read in preparation for the moose class action.
Mm-hmm.
The judge called moose charismatic megafauna, which basically means magical, mystery, very large beasts.
I love it. Charismatic what, sir?
Megafauna.
Megafauna.
Right.
Interesting. All right. Well, thank you.
Giant animals. Charismatic megafauna. But anyway, on to the topic at hand. Enough of moose and men and all that stuff.
Right.
Although, let me say this. If I carry through on my interest in seeking the PC leadership and all that works out, and if we come to government, I will not forget about moose fencing. That will be a project.
I should hope so. I think it's something that certainly deserves looking into. When it comes to the cost of a human life versus the cost of fencing versus the cost of hydroelectric power, well, everything has its place on a scale.
Yes, well, I'm not sure I'm going to electrify the fence, but not at the power rates that are coming out of Muskrat Falls.
That's a good zing. So I see that there's a press release today that you're calling on Premier Dwight Ball to refer Muskrat Falls issues to an all-party committee of the legislature. Let's examine that.
Yeah, so I think Brian Peckford put it aptly a couple of weeks ago when he released his open letter to Premier Ball. He said that the advent of this report from SNC-Lavalin pointing out only 4 months after sanction that project was likely to come a cropper over huge cost overruns, and explaining how that was. That report is a kind of smoking gun, and as Peckford said, it's the last blow to public confidence in the project. So something is needed to redress that, to redress the loss of public confidence in the Muskrat project. Mm-hmm. And the other side of that coin is, if there is an inquiry, it shouldn't be perceived by the public to be used as a weapon by the existing government against a former government and as leverage going into an election campaign. In other words, it shouldn't be turned into a political witch hunt. So
right.
I'm thinking the way, and I've consulted with a variety of people about this, so it's not just my idea. One way to avoid that happening is to have the terms of reference and the scope of the inquiry and the timing of it recommended by an all-party committee of the legislature. And the control over that kind of thing is still up to the government. They're the ones who have to pass the order in council to set up any inquiry. But this would benefit from a consensus view of what is it that's that should be looked into. By whom, maybe, it should be looked into by, and when should this start? And it's not necessarily the case that you have to do the whole thing at once. In other words, an open-ended, whole-as-well-as inquiry into every issue about Muskrat Falls. There might be bite-sized pieces you could start by biting off and chewing, and then you see where that might go. So, for example, the first stage might be the controversy between various players as to who saw that SNC-Lavalin report. Was it presented to the government? Was it presented to Nalcor? All of those things that we don't really know about now. Maybe to get to the bottom of that, we're going to have to hear from the players. Do you need to launch a full-bore inquiry into the whole thing? My concern over that is that it could become a monster of complexity.
Yeah, and also I'm just wondering how we would approach this monster of complexity within the language that the Premier and perhaps the Minister of Natural Resources had expressed, that this would slow things down in terms of the progress to complete Muskrat Falls. I'm uncertain as to how that is even possible. If you have people who are looking at your books, how does that stop hammers from being swung?
Yeah, well, that's it. Nobody that I that I've spoken to, and nobody that's been quoted in the press, who you know you'd give any credit to as having knowledge of this, is saying that this would hang up in any way or impede the efficiency of that project being completed. A forensic inquiry. Those accountants go in. They set up. They set themselves up in a boardroom somewhere, and they requisition files. It's very little extra energy required out in Alcor. And as you put it, it's not the same people swinging the hammers who are going to be helping those accountants find the paperwork. That really should be done, and it should be launched now. And that's the consensus view of the people I've spoken with. As to the inquiry, you know, if that's what's necessary to get to the bottom of the issues that the public needs to know about, then the people I've spoken to are in favor of that. But they, of course, don't want it to be a witch hunt used by one party against another.
And therefore, I see the logic of the all-party committee, and I think that's sound. It certainly, the way you present it, seems to be a viable and interesting option. Chess, we've got about 60 seconds left before we have to break for the news. I'm going to ask you a question that I think is fascinating. You're running against nobody. What is happening with the Progressive Conservative Party leadership?
Well, Jonathan, I'm actually not even running.
That was a trick question, and I'm glad you caught that.
Yeah, because, I mean, there's no start date and there's no end date. We don't know when the nominations are open. We don't know when they close. We don't know any of the basic rules about it.
Right.
Seems to be a very long time in coming. I guess it will arrive at some point. So All I can say to you is that I'm not an official candidate because there's no official race. So there it is.
Well said. But still, to this point, as of the last Corporate Research Associates polls that I've seen, and we had a chat and I had a chuckle about this last time. Still, despite the fact that there is no official race or officially declared candidates, the Progressive Conservative Party and the temporary leader, the interim leader, Paul Davis, is still ahead in the polls. It's absolutely fascinating when it comes to Newfoundland Labrador politics. I couldn't pick a better place to live.
Yeah, and that last is a matter of despair with the existing government, I think, as the main function of that. No reflection on Mr. Davis, but people are looking for any alternative to who's in there now.
Yep, that's an interesting point that we will ponder as we hear the news of the day here at the top of the hour. Thank you for your time tonight, Chess, and we'll speak very soon. Good day to you.
Okay, anytime.
Cheers, bye-bye. Chess Crosby, the only leadership candidate for the Progressive Conservative Party who has announced intention. And I tell you, soon we're going to have to call it the Crickets Party because that's all we're hearing. Where are the rules for the leadership debate, the leadership race? Not the debate, forget about that. Where are the rules for the race? Where are you, Progressive Conservative Party, on figuring out what the rules are? Let's get it on. It's already halfway through July. Come on with it. We're going to go to the break. See you after the news.
Call now, 273-5211 or 1-888-590-8626. 1-888-590-VOCM. Nightline will return on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network. This is Nightline on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network.
Welcome back to the second hour, a very interesting and fun and informative first hour. We'll certainly consider the second to be as fantastic. We're going to speak with Land Protector Denise Cole in just 1 minute, but here's an email from regular contributor and listener Robert, who says, or ponders, I've been trying to find the rules on using ATVs through streams or stream crossings. I would never do it myself because I know the difference. I think about the fish or the wildlife habitat, but today I witnessed a grown male do it with a kid on the front and another kid on the back of his one-person ATV. But it's common, and this is what he is teaching the kids. How do we educate people? Damn good questions. We're working on trying to speak with someone from the RCMP division about the rules of the road, so to speak, for all-terrain vehicles. I'll certainly add these list of questions to that discussion when it happens. And thank you, Robert, and thank you, everybody who contributes. Nightline at VOCM.com is the place to reach me. Please, if you do send emails, I'm of a certain age that I can't read paragraphs or sentences if half the words are underlined or italicized or in caps. I can't make sense of what you're trying to say. Please, just use plain English when you're sending me some data. Otherwise, it's going to take me 10 times as long to read and decipher what you have to say. Nothing against you. That's just the way my mind works. We're going to go to line number one. We're speaking with Denise Cole. Hi there.
Hey, Johnson. How are you this evening?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm doing okay. It's been a busy few days, but I should be getting used to this by now, eh?
So this would be the fourth week that Labrador and Aboriginal Affairs is being escorted, shall we say, by the land protectors?
Well, actually, the statement that we issued this morning is really that we have the vigil stopped as of today. And in all honesty, we waited for 3 weeks. We sent regular emails to the Premier's office. We certainly through social media, through open line, through any way that we could ask to have that communication, shared our statements. This is what we want to talk about, tried to open up these lines of communication. And so we had a meeting over the weekend and made the decision and put together a statement that said, we gave the opportunity to government, to the Minister of Labrador Affairs, Premier Dwight Ball, and to his staff and our four Labrador MAJs to honor their agreement with us and also to fulfill the mandate of their office, which is to be available for the economic and social development of the Labrador people. Actually, if you look on their website, the first client priority is the residents of Labrador. So they, in our opinion, when it came to us, certainly didn't do their jobs for the past 3 weeks. So we're not going to waste any more of our time trying to have a conversation with people who obviously don't want to talk with us. So we will do what we said we would do, which is we'll continue with actions to see to it that the downstream impacts and the implications of the Muskrat Falls Hydro Project to us here in Labrador, but also right across the province when it comes to fiscal responsibility and environmental consequence and what do we want to be known as a province when it comes to a project that just seems to be folding in on itself.
Interesting way to put it, that the project seems to be folding in on itself. If not, the level of support as we're seeing is careening by what polls I've read here in the province, folding in on itself. I would say arguably that the project is nearing completion. It's not folding in on itself, but support for the project is different. So do you mean the project in terms of its physical structure, or do you mean political will?
I think political will and the reality of different things. Like we're talking more and more about the North Spur. Certainly there's been the whistleblower letter that came out talking about how the manipulation of the water created the flood down in Mud Lake. More and more people and experts are pushing for this independent review of the North Spur. It seems like Nelcor has kind of made mistake after mistake, and the PC government as well as the Liberal government around this have not, doing what they said they did were going to do, which was open up the books and show the transparency and make people accountable and make sure that they were putting the words of Dwight Ball has always been, we're going to put human health, we put humans before
this project, but whatever he says, we can't stop and do an audit until after the project is over because we can't jeopardize timelines and profits and contracts. Well, whenever he says that, he is putting this project ahead of human health and well-being. So for us, that's a real problem. Like, I know one of your last guests had said an all-party committee would be the way to go, but an all-party committee would be comprised of PCs as well as liberals who have been covering up around this project for ever since it was created. So I think an all-party committee would just be another waste of taxpayers' dollars like we've seen in many other all-party committees, because at the end of the day, it's just recommendations. It's not law. It's not a true forensic audit. It's not a true public inquiry. It's more talk and less action, and we're sort of tired of that. That's why we've been taking more action here.
Right. Very powerful statements, Denise, and you're right about putting humans before, in this case, work. But if one can argue, and I'm in the position to do so, that's what I'm paid to do, so I'm going to do it. One could argue that you're putting humans first when you're providing all of these jobs and the benefits that will come from a long-term hydroelectric energy generation project, which will help sustain the independence of the province of Newfoundland and Labrador in terms of energy generation. If, in a perfect world, everyone still uses hydroelectric power over the next 30 to 50 years, this thing should, in theory, benefit generations to come. It is a long-term game, as they've said from the beginning. This is a legacy, and sometimes legacy projects do very little to benefit those who are doing it. Just ask the Israelites who built the pyramids.
And let's take a deeper look at that. So we talked about all of the jobs it's creating. So we roughly, I think they talked about peak would be 3,000 to 4,000 jobs they're being created. We know the reality. It's within the hundreds, really, that Labradorians are provided jobs. It might be within a couple of thousand of Newfoundlanders. We have a population of well over 500,000 people in this province. The actual percentage of Newfoundlanders and Labradorians who are working on this project is pretty minimal. Most of the contracts have gone to companies that are from outside, not only our province, but outside of our country. Mm-hmm. So I think when we look at that this created this huge economic revenue in the way of employment, that's been a little bit exaggerated because it's created another boom and bust cycle that we have to deal with after this project, if it does see completion. What happens to these individuals who now have to figure out more fly-in and fly-out scenarios? You know, we already saw what happened in Alberta with the oil sands and those issues that are created. And I think when you look at long-term sustainability, what we're finding more and more within the environmental world around mega dams is that mega dams are huge contributors of greenhouse gases and have serious implications about climate change, and that many places are actually basically making the decision and making legislation that they are no longer considered green energy. So you may not be able to in the future consider these projects as carbon saving ones that you get credits for as nations, as we see more countries saying that mega hydro has huge consequences, not just to downstream populations, but to overall habitat and helping create oxygen and all those things that have contributed to climate change as a globe. So that what we're going to see, I suspect, and many of us suspect who have been doing a lot of research around this, mm-hmm. and certainly what the experts tell us, is that the time will come when we'll see nations who have become very hydro-dependent, which Canada certainly is one of those, that they will have to divest the same way that they've had to now look away from fossil fuels. They're going to have to do the same thing around mega hydro. So years down the road, it's going to be the next generations who are going to have to pay the consequences they figure out. So what should we be doing besides choking up our rivers with concrete? So I think those are, you know, real concerns. That's why we went to the Indigenous leaders with our letter yesterday to all three Indigenous leaders, asking them to take stronger roles in the accountability around the methylmercury agreement, and to remember that Indigenous values say make decisions based on the next generations. I mean, a lot of First Nations say the next seven generations.
Right.
Right? So when you consider it that way, there's a whole lot of accountability when we just talk about, you know, this one small project supposed to have a long-term gain. And really, it's about export energy. It's not really about sustainability for Newfoundland and Labrador.
It's both.
It's about
that's semantics.
Into a national energy grid.
And that, of course, is part of sustainability because we can pay our own bills and we can generate some money into the coffers of the province, which, in theory, would go into paying for schools and health care and blah, 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 blah. That's
well,
the way these things go, right?
In theory. We're going to need it the way that they're cutting the money into those services. If
sure.
We don't end up having to buy our own energy back off in Nova Scotia.
Yeah. We're going to need it because we're not making enough babies as well. And we're going to need as much money as possible to sustain a non-baby making population. It's a grim future. So Denise, let me ask you.
When you're
what's that?
When you're stressed out, it's hard
oh,
to make
God,
love
yes.
when you're stressed out.
You're darn right. Put that on a shirt.
Yeah.
Denise, last question. Speaking of future, so what's the future now for the Land Protectors? The vigil has been ended. Where do you go from here?
Well, we had a very powerful motorcade on Saturday as part of the Provincial Day of Action, asking for a public inquiry and forensic audit of NELCOR. We're continuing to build solidarity. I mean, I have a meeting now in a few minutes with representatives from Ottawa, from St. John's, and from Council of Canadians to talk about how we build. And here, it's going to become a two-pronged approach of boots on the ground and building support and awareness right across the nation and beyond. So we're not slowing down at all. The more that we get ignored and don't have our questions answered by government, just the more determined that we're becoming, that if they're so afraid to answer questions around this project tells us a lot. So I think we're gaining traction, and I think we keep saying, because not everybody is into the shut Muskrat down, but we believe it needs to be shut down until all of these questions are answered. And based on the answers of those questions around the audit and the inquiry, the methylmercury mitigation, the North Spur stability investigation, I really think, depending on those answers, then we go back to the people of this province and ask the question, do we want to continue with this project? It cannot be after the project is over, because if there's dire consequences, if that North Spur fails, I mean, one thing to lose, to jeopardize over 1,000 lives downstream in the flood zone, a whole other when you lose the whole viability of your entire hydro project because you refuse to stop and do the groundwork. It's like saying, I need to take this test, but I'm not going to study for it because I don't want to make time.
Yeah, well said. I mean, this could be the next Matthew McConaughey movie as he stars in the, I don't know if you know this, but Brie X has been made into a movie, right? It's called Gold, and Matthew McConaughey is the Albertan behind it all. This could be, I mean, and I'm just cracking a joke here just to inject some brevity before we go to the commercials here. This could be an epic story of ultimate failure if indeed the scenario that you just painted comes to light. I would like to think, and I certainly do hold confidence in our government and the engineers within, whistleblowers or not, all of them, frankly, that this type of contingency has been examined. But from what I hear from people who speak to me off the record, there are certain aspects which are questionable. But at the end of the day, and call me stupid, I do have confidence in our well-paid government employees to make some proper and better decisions. As to why they're not explaining it to us, that's a question for another night. Denise, thank you very much for your time tonight, and thanks for conveying the messages that you did post today on a video. For those who are interested, where can they find your video?
You can find us on Labrador Land Protectors is our Facebook page. We also have a Twitter account at Protect Labrador. And I don't want to let out too much out of the bag yet, but we are working on the launch of a website. So there's definitely things that are coming. And certainly, I mean, people can reach out to either our Twitter or our Facebook page at this point. And really, in St. John's area, there's the Solidarity with Labrador. There's Free NL. There's Anti-Poverty NL. All of these groups are on board with us, Council of Canadians, not just the St. John's chapter, but the Atlantic Region chapter is a partner of ours. So, yeah, there's anybody who's concerned about our future and our environment, we're pretty much plugged in.
Fascinating. Well, keep in mind that a tremendous amount of money has just been announced today by the federal government to inject into Atlantic Canada as a tourism destination. There's certainly room for organizations to capitalize on the level of attention which will be pointed towards this province from across the globe. You know, positive or negative messages, everyone will seemingly in their own way benefit from the eyeballs which will be looking upon Newfoundland and Labrador. Denise, have a great night.
Actually, John, if I could throw in, just because you bring up that point, one of the things that has always really struck me and upset me a lot, and not just because some of the artifacts that were removed from Muscat Falls are from my ancestors, but we have always talked about the power that would be if they had not compromised Muscat Falls, which is one of the sacred spaces within Labrador. It has a tremendous amount of history, including one of the last known Innu shaking tents. It had, they took out over 80,000 artifacts, some dating back over 3,000 years.
There was a referendum, though, right?
A referendum?
What was there not a referendum on signing the Innu Benefits Agreement in order for this to...
Well,
to
begin? Within Innu Nation, there was certainly, I mean, Peter Pinashue was the federal MP at the time. He came home and talked a lot. But there's actually, if you ever get the interest to dig it up and have a read of it, there was back in 2009, what was called an Innu Cultural Committee, who put together a report that they presented to NELCOR. And the majority of it was done with Innu elders, as well as those who still were using the river in that area for gathering medicines and for traveling. And those, they had that traditional knowledge that we always talk about. And most of that report spoke very unkindly, and there was a lot of warning from elders to not go ahead with this project. It actually would create disaster for not just those downstream, but for any partners who were involved in this project. So there's some people who say some of those prophecies or those warnings are coming true today.
I would love to read those documents.
It's pretty easy search, but I'll take I know I have it on my hard drive there somewhere, and I'll try to send over a copy. But we could have had one hell of a World Heritage site there and had some amazing ecotourism. There's rapids on that river that would blow your mind.
Wow.
And now there's going to be a reservoir and a,
Well, there's a lot to cover there. Let's leave it for next time. But Denise, thank you, and please send information my way. I always love learning. I like to walk away each and every night just a tiny, teeny, tiny bit smarter, and I certainly did tonight. Thank you very much, and we'll speak again. Be well.
Absolutely. Take care. You too.
Good night. Thoroughly enjoy my chats with Denise Cole. We're going to speak with Mr. Ian Froud on line number 3 right after these messages.
Call now, 273-5211, or 1-888-590-8626. 1-888-590-VOCM. Nightline will return on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network. This is Nightline on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network.
And good evening. We're going to line number 3. We're speaking with Mr. Ian Froud, a young entrepreneur and aspirant towards the game, the deadly game, known as municipal politics. Ian Froud, how are you, sir?
I'm doing quite well. How are you, Jonathan?
I'm very well indeed. Thank you for calling in tonight. You are a declared candidate for Ward 4 in the city of St. John's. You are also someone who isn't afraid to get his hands dirty, given the fact that you are a farmer.
Yeah. I actually spent my day has been quite full. I spent my morning in the field gardening. I spent my afternoon canvassing, and I've been I just shut down the tool library for the evening. So it's been a very full day, fantastic different initiatives that I'm working on.
I love doing more than one thing each and every day. It's I feel it's somewhat of a blessing to have more than one finger in a couple of tasty pies, because you're never bored, Ian. You're always faced with some challenges to overcome or some shortcuts to make, or the realization that there are no shortcuts and you have to apply different strategies to move towards your ultimate goals. You are in the nonprofit industry as well as I guess we could consider farming a profit industry. What draws you between these two regions? Because they are quite a challenge. Tell us about, let's start with the tool library, because it's quite an exciting joint. I happen to see what's happening on occasion, it's wonderful to see traffic begin to increase into the doors.
Yeah, no, it's great. I'm attracted to both the farming side of things as well as the tool library because of the impact it has in our community. So I'm very much a community-focused person and trying to make interesting and great things happen for the community as a whole, as well as, the people within it. The tool library is going well. We've got over 100 members now who are in quite frequently and are using tools and working on projects throughout the city in their backyard or in their house, and it's really exciting. I just finished up a shift, as I said, and we had about a dozen or more people in bringing back tools and talking about projects they're working on, and they're able to do those projects more affordably. in a time when things aren't flush with cash. So where people are able to get to do the work themselves, learn some skills. And we have an exciting new partnership that we launched about a month ago. Ordinary Spokes is now in the tool library space. And Ordinary Spokes is a DIY, a do-it-yourself bike repair organization that has a very similar value set to the tool library of doing community work, getting people outside and active and interacting with their neighbors and making cycling more affordable.
Yeah. It's listen, I love it. I have a bike that I need that I need to be repaired, but I just don't have the technical knowledge or the time to do it myself. So it's an irony, and I've brought it by, and I spoke to the folks at Ordinary Spokes, and we had a chuckle about it because, you know, they're there to teach me how to do it, but I don't have the time at the moment to learn. But I'm just looking at my bike every day, and it's angry at me. It's so angry because I can't use it. So I'm caught in a logic loop, right? I feel like that Voyager robot that Captain Kirk caused to explode when it was caught in that logic loop. But there it is. The sources are there, but you can bring a horse. What is it? You can bring a horse to water, but you can't force it to drink. That's me. But there are so many who benefit from Ordinary Spokes. It's great that they're in that space because it's a big space. It's a making space, which I love. It's a great building, the Campbell Rentals building, the old Campbell Rentals building, and it's a bit of a incubator as well. Lehman Signs were downstairs for a few years, and now they're off to Donovan's because
they're doing incredibly well.
They've outgrown their amazing business, and I'm one of their customers. They did a great sign for my small business, and I can't wait to utilize their skills again. But I can certainly borrow a skill saw from the tool library because I'm a member, and take it out for a couple of days and try and make my own signs. I certainly can't use a skill saw on my bicycle because that would just be wrong.
Yeah, exactly. No, and on Lehman and Company, they made a gorgeous sign for the tool library, which people can drop in and see, 151 Empire Avenue, and they did that for us for free. So kudos to them, and thanks very much. I want to do a call out for tool donations as part of an update on the tool library. As people are coming in and working on different projects, people are asking for, our members are asking for additional tools to be in the inventory. So things like chainsaws and additional garden equipment. We're in the midst of a gardening season, so people are out in their backyards doing things. So things like chainsaw, gardening equipment, shovels, and things like that are much in need. We have some, but we want to build our inventory. And things like a jointer, and we've also gotten a number of requests for a sewing machine.
Really?
So it doesn't fit in the classic woodworking tool or mechanical tool category, but it's a great resource for people to have. So we're going to try and get a couple of those and have them in for people to borrow. So
that's fascinating.
Do a call out for that sort of tool as well, and people can drop off those when we're open or give us a shout.
Okay, so call out for tools. I'm going to put this out here right now on the old Twitter. So you're looking for sewing machines. Love it. Sewing machines. And you're looking for jointers?
Yeah. Chainsaw would be amazing to have. People have been asking for that. It's a great tool for doing some yard work. Just to give another example, a lawn aerator.
Aerator. Okay. Pardon my ignorance. What does a lawn aerator do?
It essentially pokes a whole lot of holes in your lawn to enable airflow, which supports grass growth.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. Ian, let's talk a minute just for selfish reasons. Talk to me about the crops which are coming up over the next couple of weeks because it's been a real slow start to the season. I did see a buddy of mine tweet out a photo of some cucumbers which are growing on the vine. What can we expect when we go down to places like the Clarenville Farmer and Market or the St. John's Farmers Market or the others that are around the province? What is coming out of the ground?
First of all, it's amazing that the Clarenville folks have access to a farmer's market now. I'm so happy that came to fruition.
It's a great spot.
Yeah. So what's upcoming are things, we're still fairly early in the season, but zucchinis are soon going to be popping out of those giant plants. We have Hockeri turnips, might even begin to get some really early, like baby-style carrots coming soon. Radishes have been around for a couple of weeks and are, of course, delicious in a variety of ways. Tomatoes, they're growing on the vine. They're not quite orange yet, but it's exciting to see them budding and beginning. So I think those are the exciting ones coming up. I specialize in a lot of green, so it's I just had a good crop of spinach and some really interesting types of lettuce that are growing quite well. It was a really rocky start. It was a cold and wet early spring, but things in the field are growing incredibly well right now, which is exciting to see.
It is. It's exciting to hear. I can't wait to see the bounty, hopefully as early, or a little bit anyway, as early as this weekend at the St. John's Farmers Market.
Yeah.
Ian, thanks for your time. Give us a shout back at your convenience. We'll talk about your aspirations as a Ward 4 candidate, but if you have got a minute or so here before we go to the next caller, if you wish to discuss some policies that you would like to focus upon.
Sure, I can very briefly. A few days ago, I had a letter to the editor in the Telegram that focused on an idea I'm pushing or promoting for the City of St. John's to try around something called participatory budgeting. So what it does is it actually puts the decision-making for a neighborhood project in the hands of the residents of that neighborhood. So instead of civil servants or politicians making a decision on what gets invested in, so whether it's a parkette or a park or crosswalks or that sort of thing, you bring a group of residents together within that neighborhood, and anyone can engage in that. They work through a process where they do brainstorming on the challenges in their neighborhood. They work with the expertise, the experts at City Hall who live this and work every day. But at the end of it, they use that feedback. The residents actually vote very specifically on what project they want to be implemented in their neighborhood, and then that project is implemented. So my proposal is we put a $500,000 to $1 million out for a project like that as a pilot, because it's a really interesting way to get residents really involved in the decision making versus just the consultation. So it brings them in, makes them a decision maker, and really empowers people to get involved in their community. So I'm hoping they might get some traction on that sort of idea. I have a bunch of different ideas I'm pursuing like that. And I actually, on my website earlier today, posted a blog as a reflection on what I've been hearing at the door so far. So people can see that at ianfrout.ca. And I reflected on what people have been telling me as I've been canvassing over the past month and a half. And I've spoken to hundreds of people across the city, so it's been really interesting. And, people can have a look there at what I've been hearing from folks around the ward.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Once again, the website is?
ianfroude.ca.
Well, that's pretty simple. All right, Froude, Froude. I suppose if you're from Pooch Cove, you'd pronounce that Ian Froude.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, you take care. I'll see you soon.
Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Good night. Fantastic pea shoots coming from his farm, the bite-sized farm. I certainly love them on a sandwich. How about you, Producer Dave Williams? Thumbs up. We're going to go talk about the tool library with Bill on line. No, we're going to line number one. All right, then. We're talking about a street known as Brazil. Just kidding, Brazil. Bernie Stapleton, are you on the line?
Hi, I'm with you.
All right. Why is it Pooch Cove, not Pouch Cove, and why is it Brazil as opposed to Brazil?
I had that very question because, you know, early on when we started rehearsing, we had some young actors with it who were pronouncing it Brazil. But there was actually a gentleman named Mr. Brazel back in the day who owned that quantity of land, and which consisted then of some farming land, some boarding houses, and some businesses. And what's really cool that I just found out is that he left the boarding houses to his daughters and nieces with the provision that they would always remain under their authority and could never be passed over to any husband or male who was marrying into the family.
Ooh, interesting.
Which I thought that was very forward thinking. But that's the origin of Brazel Square.
And now, of course, the square is referred to as street. I've heard some fascinating interviews with you, Bernie, on this subject, insofar as that Brazel Square was a bit of a hoi polloi joint or a location in town where traveling characters of interest would come and sometimes share beds with each other, because there just wasn't a lot of boarding spots in the city of St. John's.
Definitely a cultural part of our provincial life back then, and I've been getting calls from as far away as BC from people who had an encounter on Brazel Square, And because back in the day, you know, there weren't that many hotels in the city. There was the Hotel Newfoundland, which would be probably, you know, financially out of reach for the average traveler. And also because boarding houses then tended to be real cultural melting pots. So people who were coming into the city wanted to be where the life of the city was. And maybe not a lot of people now know that where the Delta Hotel now sits, that whole area was called Brazel Square. And in fact, it was a long street that came down a hill that was comprised of, you know, one would compare it to Little Italy, maybe, or Chinatown. It was very, it had a very insular, beautiful community feeling with barbershops, markets, definitely a very familial kind of feeling. And whether you were coming in, you know, from out around the bay to do some work, or journalists, for example, coming into the city to interview Joey Smallwood back in the day, often wanted to stay on the square as opposed to going to stay in the fancy hotels, because they really definitely felt that they could, you could connect with the whole province and never have to leave the square, was how the saying went.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So sort of the Woolworths of the day.
Most definitely. And so my history was that growing up in Marystown, my Uncle Bernard was what we call, I call them long road cowboys. Back in the day, they would be hauling passengers over a dirt road called the Trans-Canada Highway. Sometimes 9-12 hours, you'd be squished up in a little vehicle, no seatbelts, everybody smoking, you know, through the worst kind of weather, up to your axles in mud. Everybody all dressed up because, you know, it was a big event. And I remember that we would rattle into Brazel Square, and it was always the most amazing place because you never know who you're going to meet. And actually, you're so right. You would end up sharing a bed with somebody that you never met before that day. And of course, that's because all the women stayed in different rooms and all the men stayed in different rooms. But that's how they did it back then. And of course, the very famous expression was, you know, we'll be sleeping head to toe tonight in Brazel Square. It was definitely a very welcoming, a very vibrant place, a very political place. And definitely when I was creating my play, it was really important for me to capture the incredible amount of humanity that kind of came back and forth constantly, but yet how the people who ran the boarding houses maintained this beautiful, familial, almost, you know, monarchy. It was a very reputable thing to be doing, was to be running a boarding house. It was a business that a woman could take on and be really independent.
My bubby did it in Montreal.
Is that right?
Yeah, she ran a boarding house on Stayner Street, Stayner, just in just south of Westmount. The stories and the challenges that she experienced. She was a bit of a pioneer as far as women in Canada go, particularly Jewish women. And, you know, she was at that point divorced, and she ran this business on her own. And trust me, I met a few of the people that stayed at her boarding house. And listen, Bubby is, she was a force to be reckoned with. Bubby's Yiddish for grandmother. So no doubt nothing untoward happened, because her word was the law. But it was very interesting to see the frequency of weirdos that would go through her house, and also the most interesting and intelligent and unforgettable characters as well. That's what it is. It is a microcosm of society. That's what a rooming house is from back in the day. It's beautiful. It's poetry. It truly is. I can't wait to see this play. When's it happening?
Thank you. We are running four shows weekly for the next 2 weeks at the Majestic Theatre in downtown St. John's. That's Wednesday through Saturday. And, you know, the Majestic itself is kind of a throwback to the era. It's one of the few buildings still standing in downtown St. John's. It's a heritage building that did exist at the time of the square. And actually, the main character in the play, in the musical play, Brazel Square, Mrs. Kent, sounds a lot like your grandmother in that she was an independent woman. she was a woman with a kind of a past that she liked kept secret because single women back then, you know, or widowed women,
oh, yeah.
you know, there Pariahs. Weren't a lot of options for nope. them, right? Nope. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And we celebrate, we have six actors in the show who take on over 20 roles. And they also play all the instruments. They sing all the songs. I really wanted to create like a throwback to that time when like going out meant something. Like it was very special. People got dressed up. There would be, you know, we want there to be inexplicable happiness. We didn't really want to create a play that necessarily had to have a great explanation for everything. We wanted something that was a real exploration of the history, but that leaves people feeling good. And so we decided we actually transcend 4 decades in the play of Braswell Square with everything happening in view of the audience. Like all the scene changes, all the costume changes are all a part of the action of the show. And that's one of the things I'm really excited about Neat. Too. Is, yeah.
I will hopefully be able to get a chance to see, now that you say it's Wednesday to Saturday. So tell me, at what time are the performances? Because, you know, I have a tight schedule, so I'd like to see it, but yeah. maybe I can't.
Well, we
maybe
want people to come, and we want you to come because the show's at 8 o'clock.
Oh, cool.
The doors open at 7, and we want to say come a little bit early because sometimes parking can be thorny. But we actually have a Braswell Square information line set up that we've been taking calls from all over the country, and the line is 722-7746. The Majestic Theater has an eticsnow.com site, and tix is spelled T-I-X. Sometimes people don't want to be online doing stuff, so that's why we set up the information line, and we're really easy to find. We have a Braswell Square Facebook page. You know, we want people to call us and talk to us, and we've been gathering so many stories and so many people who come to us and say, yes, you know, I have a relative who ran a boarding house in Toronto or, you know, in Montreal, because what the boarding house has provided is universal and it was one of a kind. And, you know, as with Braswell Square, it got crowded out by development. We have a great line in our show, you know, that when they first took up the streetcars in downtown St. John's, they took away the streetcars and then they forgot about the tracks. And so for a while, you know, the tracks were kind of there. And then we have a line that, oh, what next? They'll take away the train and leave the track.
Boom.
You know, so you really get to track how Confederation brought us into being Canadians and then how Canadians came to Braswell Square and then how we all came together.
Interesting.
In this beautiful boarding house tableau.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, I will do my best to get down there Saturday night. Sounds like a date. Thank you very much. Braswell Street, written and directed by none other than Bernie Stapleton. Congratulations. Speak soon.
Thanks so much.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that is at the Majestic, which is a great old spot. She's absolutely right. We're going to the break. Bill's in the queue to talk about the Tool Library right after this.
Call now, 273-5211, or 1-888-590-8626. 1-888-590-VOCM. Nightline will return on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network. This is Nightline on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network.
And welcome back to the program. Line number 2, waiting patiently, is Bill. Hello, Bill.
I've got patience too, boy. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you, sir?
Long time no hear.
No kidding.
Am I speaking with Jonathan?
You are, I'm afraid.
Good, the musical guy.
What's that?
The musical guy, I think.
The musical guy. No, that's Daryl Power. The only time I'm musical is when I eat beans.
The heat must have got to me. Anyway, I shall commend Ian. Doing a great job.
Isn't he?
He's got a green finger, green thumb.
He does.
Yes. And first of all, my name is Bill Fogwill, political guy.
Okay.
I want him to call me at any time. I don't deal with this whole mess of old blah, blah, blah. Just call me at 579-9135.
579-9135.
Yeah, I'm with the campaign for Ward 4.
Okay, I will I will send him that number personally. So it's 579-9135.
Right on, man.
Okay, so you say you're a political fellow.
Oh, yeah, 82, I ran NDP.
Right.
Now my sister Helen Fogwill Porter,
mm-hmm.
whom Bernice Stapleton knows well. And we still talk about that later.
Okay.
Yes, I did. Yes, it's about the time of Brian Pepford. So I ran Lewisport. And, yeah, great time, great experience, great experience. For the NDP, I must say.
It's a little different these days, Bill. Bye. You're under the microscope, no matter where you're to.
I'm well aware of that. Anyway, I'm alive. I'm kicking. I'm only 73. I'm still a young teenager, buddy.
Right.
Anyway, youngster. He's doing a great job. And I've got a plate to donate to Ian just down the road.
Okay.
That used to be called Complete Rentals.
Yes, sir.
Yep. I got a bike, $300 bike. I don't want to ride a bike yet. I might get a scooter, not a bike.
Okay.
That's great. It's a great thing. My God. You can borrow a hammer. Same as the library. I worked at the library years ago. God, the Memorial Library. And you can rent a book. Now you can rent a tool.
Yes. Well, I've rented. I've taken out a shop vac a couple of times, a skill saw, reciprocator. It's just fantastic.
Great.
Yep.
Great bike. Great. I'm telling you. Anyway, thank God I haven't called you guys in about 2 or 3 months. I'm stuck on VOWR. Anyway, another thing, sir. Another thing. No Donald Trump. Thank God for that.
I do my best to avoid any information concerning the president. I feel like I'm living in a parallel universe, but it does me well. Yeah.
Anyway, yes, I stayed at Confederation Square.
Okay.
So is our friend. Sang about our deceased friend, I can't remember her name. You know who it is.
Joe Morrissey?
Yes, Mike.
Yes, yeah.
Raised on the base. On Confederation Square. I stayed there at the, and my dad and my twin brother. And we had fabulous meals, years ago.
Amazing.
Yep. I stayed at places. I stayed at the Queen Elizabeth, Montreal. I was supposed to say boarding houses. But it's a fabulous place. Great place to make a living. My God. What a service. White linen. White cloth.
Oh, the hotels back in when I was a kid in the 70s were just so different than what they are today. And you're right about the white linen. It was something special when we used to travel to Montreal, where my parents were from. You know, brunch at the Four Seasons Hotel was... It was Raymond's back in the day, you know what I mean? And the white linen and the gloves and the fancy people that would come to your table. And,
yeah. Well, see, wild. I'm an old guy. I'm a CN guy. Worked on the trains.
Lucky.
Don't know if you would have. White linen. So I know that.
That's beautiful. Bill, listen, we're out of time tonight, but I want you to call me back because I want to hear about your times on the trains, would you?
All right, listen, come here.
What?
I want to give a bouquet to one person, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
Okay. Carl... Carol, let me see, English from Rhonda Bay.
Okay.
He's a Newfoundlander. Found out yesterday. His family, he had four, there's four boys in the family. And his mom and dad got burned in the fire years ago. And he's Francis. He's a millionaire, but self-made.
Okay.
And he's the international Olympic boxer. And plays basketball.
Okay.
Didn't know until yesterday, so my daughter told me, because she goes, I was her brother. A small guy from Runaway.
That's great.
So heads up to him, buddy. I know you got short time.
Well, that's all. Yeah, we do have a short time, but I want you to call me back, because this is a real
sure
treat.
Will.
All right.
Thanks very much.
Good night to you, Bill.
Thanks for me again, buddy.
My name is Jonathan.
I know, Jonathan. I know this.
All right.
You forgot supper at George Street United Church last year.
Yes.
I know.
At the Dialogue. Right.
Right.
All right. Face to the name.
God bless.
Okay, God bless.
Take care, man.
Take care, Bill.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Great fella. We're going to go say goodnight, and thank you to the other great fella on the other side of the glass, Dave Williams. On behalf of both of us, Lila Tove.